PRI's Studio 360 is made possible in part by a grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson. On the old show Happy Days, there was an episode in 1977 in which Henry Winkler's Fonzarelli, the coolest guy in town, has to jump over a shark while water skiing.
He's really going to do it!
He's ready to make the jump!
What? He does it. Even for fans of Happy Days, and you know who you are, this stunt went way, way beyond the show's teenage premise. It was just ludicrous. The mere sight of the Fonz in swim trunks. Let's not go there. Years later, some pop culture junkies named their website jumptheshark.com, collecting people's votes on the unforgivable episodes of every show in TV history. Thanks to that website, jumping the shark is now a term of art for the moment when it all starts to go downhill. Some weeks ago, we asked our listeners to email us with their own votes for jumping the shark in music and movies and literature as well as TV. So here we go.
Hello, this is Kelly Allen.
Hi, Kelly. It's Kurt Anderson at Studio 360.
Hello, how are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
So tell me... Who let you down?
Well, basically, I was very let down by George Lucas. I have a big bone to pick with him, actually.
Were you a huge Star Wars fan to begin with?
Yes. Yes, I remember I was about 10 years old, and I went to a slumber party, and I saw it. They were playing Empire Strikes Back on the VCR, and it just blew me away.
You're not actually going into an asteroid field.
They'd be crazy to follow us, wouldn't they?
All I could think about was Empire Strikes Back for days after that.
When did you start thinking these new ones aren't as good as the old ones?
Well, for 15 years I was waiting for the new Star Wars movies to come out. And I remember the Phantom Menace back when it came out in 1999. The tickets were all sold out, so I got the 2:30 a.m. in the morning performance of Star Wars. We sat down, the movie opened. I remember just seeing the credits roll down, and it said something about trade federations and trade routes and taxes, and it seemed more like a copy of Foreign Affairs than it did kind of intergalactic cultural phenomena. So it was very disappointing, the first movie.
Do you wish that he just never made the later ones?
In a way. I mean, if he ever knew what his parents were really like, Luke and Leia, would they actually be disappointed? I wonder what they would think.
This is Sean.
Hi, this is Kurt Anderson at Studio 360.
Hi, Kurt. How are you?
Good. Tell me about your devastating disappointment.
My submission would probably have to be Liz Phair's self-titled album. She did what I would consider probably the best album of the 90s with Exile in Guyville.
Right, which was her, if not her first album, certainly her first big hit album.
Yeah, and basically it was just a great album.
Was there one song or that, you know, struck home to your heart?
It had to be Divorce Song. The lyrics just... I mean, floored me when I heard it.
It's harder to be friends than lovers, and you shouldn't try to mix the two, because if you do it and you're still unhappy, then you know that the problem is you.
That was like a regular fixture in my CD player, I think, for probably 3 or 4 years. For her self-titled one, she... hired these producers who are known for just turning out hits. And I honestly tried to give it a chance. It just seemed so cynical, and just everything that earlier stuff was kind of like a statement against.
So she went from being sort of Ms. Indie to more mainstream.
There was this one, I think it was like called Why Can't I? And the chorus, Whenever I Think About You, kind of had this airy, bubblegummy. It kind of reminded me of like stuff you'd overhear when you're at a mall or you're at a gym.
You know, I wrote about Woody Allen, who sort of growing up was my idol. I just loved everything about his movies.
What was the last Woody Allen movie you loved?
Well, the last one that I really think was truly great was probably Deconstructing Harry, and that was such a long time ago.
Harry, just tell me something. Was she the only one, or were there others?
No, Amy Pollock was the only one. May God strike me dead if I'm lying.
You're an atheist, Harry. Yeah.
Hey, we're alone in the universe. You're going to blame that on me, too?
After Small Time Crooks, those were just bad movies. Like, just bad. And I would take my friends to them because I have this sort of tradition of going on opening day. Mm-hmm. And they would just hate me afterwards for making them sit through them. And I honestly didn't go see Melinda and Melinda because I was just, I couldn't do it again to myself. Maybe I'll go see it. I'll rent Melinda and Melinda. I'll have a day where, you know, I don't have to be in a good mood.
If I can give you some friendly advice, don't rent Melinda and Melinda.
All right, I won't.
It'll set you back.
It will, huh? Yeah. It just looked like it. It looked like he was trying too hard. I mean, when you look at a movie like Hannah and Her Sisters, that I think is pretty much as close to perfect as any movie could get, and gets better every time you watch it, you think, well, there's a man who knows what it's like to be human. And I feel like he forgot.
Thanks to all of you who wrote in, especially those we couldn't get to. And in case you were wondering, we got the most votes for Woody Allen. Joining me in the studio now is a guy who's had his share of big successes, as well as maybe a bomb or two. He got his break playing an assortment of creepy losers on Late Night with David Letterman. He's been in movies and had his own TV show and now has his own historical novel. Chris Elliott, thanks for joining me.
Kurt, thanks for having me. It's good to see you again.
Now, you are an artist and a performer who have done many things. As you sat there listening to these disappointed fans, did you think about, God, they expect so much of me?
I've jumped the shark so many times in my career that I'm surprised my name didn't come up a few times there and with your callers. But I don't know. You know, you do. I started, as you know, sort of making fun of performers. And then when I made the transition to actually becoming one and having to make my living as one, I started to sort of respect, you know, other people's failures a little bit more and be a little less hard on them. So
because you just see how hard it is to do well?
And because I just fail constantly myself. So, it's a weird thing. It was a lot easier when I was at Letterman to sit back and laugh at people who were falling on their faces or making mistakes or not doing what they, work that was up to par than it is now for me.
Are there people who you loved and respected as performers, filmmakers, who disappointed you as, for instance, George Lucas disappointed that woman we heard earlier?
Yeah, I would be worried about her, actually. She was a little too disappointed, I think. I suppose so. I think every artist, like a musical artist or even comedians, everybody's evolving. And what people don't really realize is that that's happening and nobody can stop that, even the own, you know, the artists themselves.
Well, it is true that what is considered a success or good in a creative artistic sense at a moment obviously is a changeable.
Right. And the audience judgment is changing, and what the artist or writer or actor or whatever is also changing.
And by the same token, what was considered not successful at one moment, like your series for Fox, Get a Life, can be considered a great success later by audiences, as Get a Life is
right
today. You played a 30-year-old paperboy, and I remember one episode in particular where you improbably and suddenly marry a supermodel, and on the same afternoon, you go in for marriage counseling. Let's listen to a little bit of that.
She is right, you know, Chris. I am too beautiful for you.
I know. I guess it just took the objective voice of an outsider to get us to admit it to ourselves. I'm sorry, Nicolette.
I'm sorry too, Chris.
I have no memory of that whatsoever.
That was Chris Elliott in Get a Life. Get a Life was canceled after two seasons.
Yeah, well, that was a season and a half, actually. But two, you're being very kind. Yes, two seasons.
What went wrong there?
I think that there was a bit of a bait and switch with what Fox thought they were getting and what we eventually gave them. You know, I went in there and kind of pitched them basically a warm-hearted story about an adult guy who had the mind of a child. And, you know, what they got was a nut living at home with his parents, who are also nuts, in a town that was completely populated by nuts. And at the time, Fox, you know, I think they really were trying to move away, believe it or not, from the shows that were their hits, like Married with Children and Living Color. They wanted to, you know, a Cosby show. They wanted to be sort of more respected at the time.
And this was more actually in the mold of kind of great quirky shows of a kind that Fox does today, even Arrested Development, for instance.
Right. No, absolutely. But so I guess to a degree it was a little bit before its time, but it was sort of on the edge of that whole sort of trend of idiot man-child kind of comedy that started happening in movies also, Dumb and Dumber and that kind of thing.
And Get a Life has had this life as a cult hit of sorts.
You know, a lot of people like that show for different reasons now that I've, you know, have stepped back and talked to people about it, you know, and some people just like the stupidity of it. Some people loved the fact that it was just making fun of the fact that it was a sitcom, you know, and that it was on the air and that I did actually have my dad on the show, you know, and he was wearing pajamas because, you know, I wanted him to be comfortable shooting the show. It wasn't really because I thought that was going to be particularly funny to have my parents in pajamas all the time. I just wanted my dad there while we were shooting to be comfortable, not have to worry about wardrobe changes.
Chris Elliott is my guest today. He is an actor, screenwriter, and novelist. Coming up, a heavy metal superstar becomes a victim of his own success.
It's almost like he's Sisyphus, but, like, he has purchased the rock and the mountain.
That's ahead in Studio 360 from PRI, Public Radio International. Stay with us.
Studio 360 is supported by Warner Brothers and Nonesuch Records, now featuring Mark Knopfler and Emmylou Harris in their first album together, All the Road Running, a collection of 12 original songs available now at Tower.com. National tour begins June 21st.